Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Phase Zero, Episode 16. It's time for a big episode today. I am your host, Brandon Davis. Joined today, Jenna Anderson is here.
Hey, everybody.
Aaron Perrine is back on the program.
Ready to rock, BD. Let's do this.
And you all know us, so we're just going to jump straight into it because we have a really big show and I'm very excited about it. We have a special guest. I've been talking about it on Twitter all week. You know, I'm fired up. Our guest today has directed two episodes of The Walking Dead, one of which is a personal favorite of mine, introduced my good friend Tom Payne as Jesus to the show. The resume includes Nosferatu, The Handmaid's Tale. Ironically enough, there is a title on Kari Skogland's resume called Endgame. Directed an episode of a show called Endgame. Not Avengers Endgame, though. A different Endgame. A Canadian director showed off all her talent that she's accumulated through the years of work with The Falcon and The Winter Soldier. Our guest today is director Kari Skogland.
Hello. Nice
Hello,
to be here.
Kari. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. My goodness, it's been a wonderful wild ride with the boys on Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Wrangling them all around the world, huh?
Oh, yeah. And at one point, I think Sebastian was completely covered head to toe as we were, you know, heading overseas. And it was, the first of the pandemic, or maybe it was coming back. I guess it was coming back. So he was like, because we were all very, nervous about what was going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we appreciate y'all putting in the hard work at those times because the show was awesome. And this entertainment has been getting us through. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming on the show. So if you're ready, we could jump in and talk about it.
Oh, yeah, please go for it.
I want to start with the costume, which was the most exciting part of the last episode for me, was seeing this Captain America costume. I'd love to hear from you. How many iterations of the costume were there, like in terms of concept art or maybe that were actually created? And you guys were filming outdoors. Were you worried about it leaking?
Oh, yeah. And it was shocking that it didn't leak, frankly. That's a testimony to, everybody on the show and the team that is in charge of that, whoever that is. But we had people cloaked and, as they walked from set to their trailers and wherever they would be in public eye. But it took many months of a big team, and they do an amazing job of, because every detail has to be thought about. And we did probably, 20 different iterations, all subtly different. It truthfully wasn't, radical big swings at overall, the same design was, different versions of the same basic idea. But, it's so detailed, and they have to take into consideration not just the suit and the look, but how it feels, the actual material it's made of, how it will wear, because, of course, it has to, he has to be able to move and do stunt work in it, and, all the minutiae that goes into it. And then it has to be built, and it takes about, 2 to 3 months to build it, just literally the so-called sew it. I'm sure there's many different ways of how it comes together. So, yeah, a lot of work.
Came out great.
Hi, Kari. So I wanted to ask about Sam's speech. It was really moving. It's like the emotional centerpiece of the last episode. I was wondering how much Anthony had to do with it, because I watched the episode of Hot Wings, where he did a Shakespearean soliloquy on the spot while about to pass out from the wing. So I know he can deliver a monologue. How did you guys know about crafting it?
Yeah, well, that was also many months of work. And he and Malcolm, Anthony was very involved in that. And they went back and forth quite a bit, as did we. You know, it sort of went through all of us. And, you know, the striking thing, and this was informed, we actually filmed that toward the end of the schedule, and which was kind of great because we were, as you go, as you can imagine, particularly a show of this size and scale and scope, a lot changes. You know, not big changes, but we get informed by different things as we go. And, you know, the Isaiah Bradley moments, we knew what they were. We had filmed them. And so that was very heartfelt. We had tweaked some of the GRC scenes. And so we knew what that was. So ultimately, because this is a very racially charged, you know, show of discussing what that shield means to Sam, what it means to Bucky, what it means to Carly even. And we had really taken it out for a road test. Now we wanted that speech not to tie it up all in a nice, neat little bow. We wanted it to open doors and continue the conversation. And so what was great, I thought some of the most poignant ideas was, you know, you can do better. What you've got the power. Now what are you going to do with it? And those are discussion starters. And they're motivated to, or they're motivators, I suppose. And that's really what that speech wanted to be, rather than a, oh, by the way, you know, let me tie it all up and I've done this thing and now it's all solved.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. That really landed the central theme of the show perfectly. It came out so well. Now I want to talk about Bucky Barnes also. I talked to Malcolm the other day and he told me that you really wanted to work with motorcycles. That he knew all along there was going to be a motorcycle. Tell me about your love of doing action scenes with motorcycles.
Well, you know, on some of the work that I've done in the past, I've done quite a bit of car chase work. And then I did some motocross style of work on off-road bikes and such. And so I really enjoyed, you know, slapping cameras all over, you know, different crazy places. I did, you know, for the show, one of the, not just motorcycles, but the aerial stuff and all that, I looked at a lot of extreme sports videos, and that was where I got a lot of the inspiration of how to cover, how to be, whether it be the bike or, you know, the squirrel suits at the beginning and all that. It was all inspired by, you know, real teams and real scenarios. So yeah, bikes are the best.
It looked awesome when he went over that roadblock, and that was so cool. That was cool. I loved it.
So, touching on a completely different part of Bucky's arc on the show, I am a huge Bucky fan, and I love all of the character development and all of just the discussion of his mental health and his mental well-being over the course of the show. Where would you say Bucky has landed at the end of the series mentally? Like, going forward, where do you see his kind of position being?
I kind of see him at the beginning, actually. Because if you think about, you know, in the psychiatrist scene where he is, she says, you know, you're free. And he says, well, to do what? You know, this is a man who's trying to find his relevance. And I mean, both characters are actually trying to find their relevance going forward, but from sort of different lanes. And so Bucky is, you know, he's got his mind back, but he also has the memories. So he's going to have to cope with how to deal with the guilt that comes with, you know, going forward. And this is a true mental health arena that we were tapping into, both from the PTSD side of it and also to trauma or psychosis, where you come out and you're now you have to deal with real life. And that's horrific, because it's not like you don't remember all the things you did or you were while you were in an altered state. So going forward from here, and that's why the Sam moment where he says, you know, you got it wrong. You're trying to fix yourself. You fix somebody else, you know, serve others. And so he sort of realizes, oh, I've been getting it wrong. I've been trying to do these things for my sake. And actually, I'm second on this tier. I'm going to have to heal. I'm going to have to do it for their sake. And so we have the impression that he's gone through the whole book, right? We crossed off all the names. So he's been doing the work. At the end of our show, it's kind of like his beginning, because for the first time, I think he can now start to connect with himself as who he now is going to be. And also he's got to grow into being a man of the present. This is, he's 105 years old, which we play with, and we enjoy with on the date. But truthfully, he is 105 years old. And so he's not technologically kind of inclined, and he's certainly not ready to deal with the new woman who is, very forthright and so on and so forth. So there's lots of fun to be had, I think, with him going forward.
I hope I look anything like Sebastian Stan when I'm 105 years old.
Oh my God, yeah.
I know that the production was like, I found this really interesting how you guys talked about this stuff in the Assembled episode today. And I know obviously you guys got shut down for a while and came back, and Malcolm has talked about how some story elements were changed, but not much, like most of it was maintained. But I'm curious like how, like the release schedule moved. Like this was originally like a post Black Widow thing, and it became a pre Black Widow after WandaVision. And then Vanity Fair, I don't know if you saw this, Vanity Fair said that that Val was supposed to debut in Black Widow. And I don't know if you can speak to this, but I would love to hear, like, was she like added post shutdown? Was this like a change, or was she always part of the show? Like, how did that come to be?
She was always part of the show, and in fact, we filmed her pre shutdown. So she was, No, we didn't really, I'm sure Malcolm said the same thing. We didn't really change that much because we started shooting not long before the pandemic, but long enough that 75% of the show was already in the can. So this wasn't about us pivoting story wise. It was really just about us tweaking, because at the same time, we were already in this arena. We were already, dealing with these big topics and themes. So we were well down the road. What it did allow us to do, we went into post-production because we used the time wisely, and we were able to kind of sharpen our pencil. So we were really looking at all the material we had, the characters that we were discovering. Because don't forget, we were discovering who Sam is. We were discovering who Bucky is. Because even for the actors as well as for the storyline, we'd never gone home with them. And Carly, we were just kind of discovering, so we were tweaking that kind of stuff. And John Walker, we had done a lot of work. John was a really, I loved how we came at him, which was kind of allowing a certain amount of experimentation to be part of how we found who he was, because we could have come at him many different ways. And Wyatt's a very funny guy. And so, there was plenty of experimenting with how lighthearted to make him or how earnest. And this was, so we did a lot of work where in each scene, we might calibrate it a couple of different ways, because we wanted to see in the end when we looked at the whole piece, because we shot it like a movie. So we looked at 6 episodes and said, let's dial them here and let's dial them there. And we had the footage and the the different takes to be able to do that. So that's what we really focused on during the pandemic. And then at the same time, of course, there was a lot going on in the world, both politically and with the racially charged protests and so on. And so it sort of just gave us the heart that we were right on. Our relevance was becoming even more and more so pronounced, which just made us sharpen our pencil.
And so I have to follow up at the topic of Val. I know a few of you have the Marvel keys to the kingdom. Val, John, some of these folks, Thunderbolts, Baron Zemo, do you want to see that? Do you know anything about that? What can you tell us?
Can tell you nothing, because I know.
Very well played. I want to move on to Isaiah Bradley. And Jenna, I want to let you take this.
So we are huge fans of Isaiah on this show, and especially of the way that you guys represented him on the show. I find it really interesting that you both honored the comics and also put a unique spin on it by having Isaiah's legacy be honored through Sam, as opposed to in the comics, it's more honored through Steve. Can you talk about bringing those kind of moments between the two of them to life in that relationship, because it's clearly like one of the most impactful things out of the show?
Well, first of all, the desire to make Isaiah to support the importance of that character in a storyline, I think, was first and foremost, because he's a hugely important character to reveal right? And within our story, that there was a black super soldier and that he was abused. I think right there, it had to have a really strong, real estate in our storyline. But at the same time, it couldn't really be plot motivated. It was more character plot. So it became our touchstone for Sam as he is pondering what it is to take up the shield, whether his own community is ready, whether certainly, this is a very white iconic symbol and it was going to cost him in some way, both through the white community and through his own community. So in so doing, who is he going to talk to about that? And so Isaiah became a perfect touchstone for him, first of all, to, be reeling with this new information that he feels betrayed for not knowing that, that no one told him. And now, we sort of said, well, Steve didn't really know, only Bucky knew. But that even that is a betrayal because, telling a lie by omission. But then there could only be one person to say to him, no self-respecting black man will pick up that shield. And right. And it had to be Isaiah. So I think that's one of the strongest lines of the show for Sam to have to really consider what it's going to be. So, yeah, that had to be Isaiah.
And it also, they say several times Steve Rogers is gone, which I find interesting. Is that can we say Steve is like dead of the MC? Like is he on the moon? Danny told me that line was kind of improv. Danny told me that line was kind of improv, that you guys tried a few different things and that's the one that stuck. And then here we are, the whole world now is like, is Chris?
No, he's not on the moon. He's definitely on the moon.
Aaron, did you want to ask anything about Eli?
Oh yeah. We see Eli hovering around the background. Terrible his jumper may be, missing that jump shot. Can we expect to see him again at IPSU at some point? We saw some stuff on Instagram with his family talking a little bit about Patriot.
I hope so. Wasn't he a lovely character? And what I really was. He and Sam kind of doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to get some manners, son.
Exactly.
I just loved what he brought to that role. Because, it also, what we were trying to convey, not only through him, but through Sarah's children, the legacy, the idea of generational legacy. And so, across the board, whether it be a character like an Eli, these kids, and that one of I think Kevin's favorite shots, and certainly mine, and it was again an impromptu moment where I said, let's just try this. The Sarah's son, and he's drawing the shield, drawing the star on the shield, touching it, kind of like the, can I touch the shield? Which is, and the kids playing with the shield. Bucky, the sort of the pennies drop for the first time when Bucky sees these young boys playing with the shield and enjoying it and owning it. And that's a really strong moment when you think about what's been denied, this white sort of iconic symbol, what's been denied to legacy. And so these were small threads, but really important ones.
Love it. Now, before we get to a couple more of our questions, we have some fans who have a couple questions. I want to bring, we have a fan from Greece right now that has a fun question. This is George Bikos. George, welcome to Phase Zero, man.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for having me. Greetings from Greece. Yes, you find me from here. Hi, really nice to meet you. It's an honor. Congratulations for the show, and I really hope we get to see you direct the next Captain America project. Either it's a series, a next season, or a new movie.
I think you have your headphones microphone a little low.
Okay.
Coming in really quietly. Oh, that's much better. Yeah, there it is.
Okay. Now
there
it
is.
Try it again.
Yeah. So did you hear anything or should I?
Yeah, we just need the question, I think.
We heard the beginning. Go ahead with the question.
Yeah. So 5 years ago in Civil War, we got to see Baron Zemo, take the Avengers apart one by one, all by himself, making him a special villain for the MCU. Fast forward to episode 3, we got to see Baron Zemo in Madripoor in a nightclub, dancing. And this short 10-second clip exploded. It went viral for several days. Even Marvel posted an one-hour loop of Zemo dancing. So wrapping up this series, did you predict, did you have any idea that this short clip would explode like that?
No idea. What was fun about the whole nightclub idea and experience of it, I wanted everyone to see the guys just as people. And one of the things about doing the 6-hour version of a movie as compared to a 2-hour version is you can actually do that. You can kind of go off course for a little bit with the characters to new places and see them in different backgrounds and settings. So the nightclub, I wanted to see them kind of having fun. There's nowhere in the story really that they can just have fun. They can have banter with each other, but the fun of it is limited because they're on such a big mission. So that was totally Daniel's moment where he ad-libbed that. We were shooting varying parts of the club. And of course the music was going and we did probably, 25 or 30 takes of different parts of that scene. And so I guess he got, he just got into it. So we had 3 cameras on him. So he was, dancing away. And we, of course, cut it in, but with no idea. Other than it was terrific to see, to get it to know Zemo a little bit differently as a human. Because as you said, he took the Avengers apart one by one. But we got to get a feel for who he might have been before. And certainly who he is now. So that was all part of that same big plan. Now, I hope the next time we film something like that, I'll get Anthony and Sebastian doing the same thing. We have to pay homage somehow, don't we?
And he's also got a Suitcovia brand that he has to market now.
Exactly.
I love that. George, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we have one more fan I want to get to. This is Layla from the UK, who has a fun question for you as well. Richard, is Layla with us? Hi, Layla.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. So I just want to say that ever since I started liking Marvel, Sam and Bucky have been two of my favorite characters. So them just getting their own show has been the dream project for me, and I just loved it so much. So thank you. So I wanted to know, I loved it. So I wanted to know if you could have Sam and Bucky team up with, or just have more interactions with any of a Marvel character, who would it be and why?
Wow, that's a big one. Who would it be and why? Well, Would Spider-Man, would that be interesting?
Mackie and Tom Holland?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so funny. I'm so inside the lane. I was going to say Sharon Carter, but of course they kind of have had that interaction. So that becomes a little dull. but yeah, I don't know. It might be fun to see them with Spider-Man.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Layla, for coming on the show. Great question.
Thank you for having me.
Layla has a store behind her. Look at all those.
Look at that. I know. Look at that collection.
See, I was inspired by all your Spider-Man. You got all these little
Spider-Man. They're all here.
Yeah.
I have the Sam and Bucky ones here, too.
Do you already? Oh, wow. I've got them somewhere as well. They're hilarious.
Oh, here they go. Let's see.
Yeah, take a look. Have you seen these?
Oh yeah, see that now they have the new Sam Wilson Captain America ones too that are just ready to take all my money.
Yeah.
Layla, thank you so much. You were great. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
We got to do that. We promised in the first episode of Phase Zero that we would get some fans connected with some of the Marvel family, and it's an absolute privilege to do that. Thank you, Kari, for being a great sport with our fans.
Oh, no worries. My pleasure. I'm thrilled with how engaged they are with this show. I mean, that was also, one of the agendas was to, you know, the deeper themes that we're talking about, you know, the sort of heavier stuff that's always underneath the surface of any Marvel project, because they do really like, pushing the envelope and having, you know, promoting social change and looking at relevance, social issues. And so to see the engagement of the audience has been really extraordinary.
Yeah, the Marvel family, I'm really engaged with so many fans on Twitter, and they like, it's so many good people who are just trying to have fun with it and like create an inclusive, awesome environment. And I love that. Now, in the last answer, you talked about Sharon Carter. They already worked together. Jenna has a good question for you about Sharon Carter.
So Sharon's arc across the entire series is just really fascinating. I know a lot of people didn't expect, especially when she was introduced all those years ago, that she would end up being a villain and have this twist tied to her. So what was the pitch and the process like with Emily of trying to develop that twist and that arc of her becoming a villain?
Well, it was actually pretty difficult because we knew where we were going with it, and you wanted to be able to watch the show afterwards and go, oh yeah, I see now. But at the same time, we couldn't wink or nod at the audience we had to keep the lid on it. So it was a bit of a dance to make sure that we didn't give it away, but that if you look at it a second time, you get that she's fully, you know, manipulating the situation. It was a lot of fun to imagine and for her to do all the rehearsals involved and to design the fight sequences. I wanted them to have a really new level of badassery. And so she took it on outside the Dr. Nagel's lab in the shipyards. She took that on like a trooper. And I think that's some of the better fight sequences that we managed to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted, before we wrap up, I want to talk about Carly Morgenthau, who was Aaron Kellerman did such a great job with this character. Aaron, you had a good question for this one.
So she starts out, we've heard that she starts out kind of as a hero. Where's like the line where she sort of crosses over into being the antagonist for the series for you?
Well, first of all, one of the things we were looking at is, radicalization, right? So how does someone like her, this lovely, innocent face, who is saying a lot of the right things, and her cause is a good cause. It's a slippery slope. The point was we were trying to take look at what that slippery slope is, which is sort of the process of radicalization, where it starts to just shift and then shift and then shift, and turns it toxic. So never did she lose the true passion for what she wanted to do as being a good thing. But as Mama Danya died, and I think that's for me where it switched, and her anger at the injustice of what that was is the turning point where she starts to go, okay, they're not hearing me. The GRC, which is the, sort of the great establishment, they're not hearing me. So I'm going to ratchet up my game because they're going to pay attention somehow, because her death is not going to be in vain. And that's where she starts going. And of course she starts taking her flag smashers with her because they've gone the distance and they kind of buy in, but you see each one of them getting squeamish over every line that they're crossing. What I loved about this storyline and how we presented it was also Sam, and this is something I'd love to just jam in here if you don't mind, is Sam is very much about the discussion of what is a hero. And so he is, as he's considering the shield and considering this world that he's in and what he's fighting against, he's also grappling with the question of what is the hero of today and the future, and what was the hero. And she's part of that conversation as she says the shield should be given up. This is, it's old, it's an old idea. And he said the same thing at the very beginning when he said, this shield is for him. and the man who carried it, but it's not relevant for the future. We need new heroes. So the new paradigm, you know, if that was the old hero, which is sort of warrior soldier, which came out of the 30s, which was an anti-fascist movement, then the new hero is frontline worker. It's a first responder. And so that whole world is opened up, and that's who Sam was and is, because he's a counselor for soldiers and such. So he never lost his, even though Zemo said, you know, she you're believing in the wrong person. She's going to be bad. And she did turn out kind of to be bad. But I felt like she, even though she did some heinous things, and I felt like the two of them kind of reconnected, because he never lost his faith that she was right, that she could be brought back from the ledge, and that he could help her harness that energy, which was a good energy that had gone wrong. And that's why he refuses to fight with her at the end. How many heroes do you see saying, I won't fight you. I won't fight the villain. Stop it. And then as she's dying, she says, I'm sorry. And I think that's the moment for me where she's a little bit vindicated, or a little bit redeemed, I should say. And he's a bit vindicated in the sense that she was the right soul. She did have goodness in her, but it cost her everything. Her poor decisions cost her everything. So I just wanted to jam that in there, because that's all surrounded in the Carly conversation. And as she's poking holes at what a hero is, so is Sam.
But I also really like the parallel you make there with the how many times you see a hero who won't fight the villain. The only other time I can think I've seen that is Steve Rogers.
Right.
When he wouldn't fight Bucky as the Winter Soldiers. I love that.
Exactly. And so that's the makeup or the DNA of someone who is deserving of the thoughtfulness of what it is to carry that shield.
Yeah. And my last thing for you, when you're crafting this final showdown in New York, and I'm sure everybody who directs any MCU project is going to get a similar question, because now following Endgame, all these characters and these heroes know each other. Like, do you consider, like, oh, should we have a character pop in? Should we have like a logo, like a Daily Bugle, or I don't know, anything that would be like iconography or imagery that would signify the presence of other New York heroes? And I'm sure people are going to run into that when they go to California and other parts of the MCU in the future. Did you ever have to have conversations like that? Like, where's Spider-Man at this point? Where's J. Jonah Jameson? Where's Doctor Strange?
No, you know what? I think everyone in the storytelling side of the creative of Marvel, we just look at each story as its own thing. And so even though it cross-pollinates in other ways, the story itself remains individual to itself and serves only itself. So no, it didn't. We didn't wonder who shouldn't we be calling, Spider-Man or somebody? we didn't have that conversation, thankfully, because, you can imagine from my perspective, almost every scene in this show, I have, particularly in the action sequences, I have six characters fighting each other, sometimes eight. That's a lot of coverage. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of choreography. So I'm very happy that there was no more.
Well, it came out fantastic. We do have one fan. This is a pre-recorded message from a fan that I want to play, because Dottie is in the comment section. They are with us every week. Dottie is an awesome fan of Phasier. And I want to get this question out before we send you off. Richard, roll Dottie's question, please.
Hi, my name is Dottie and I'm from San Antonio, Texas. And let me just start by saying that your show is absolutely amazing and it has brought me so much joy over the past 2 months. But my question for you is, if you had to format the Falcon and the Winter Soldier like WandaVision, what classic sitcom would you cast Sam and Bucky in?
What classic sitcom would you cast Sam and Bucky in?
So I was thinking about it. And all these old sitcoms came to my mind, like old ones, because I don't know why I'm sort of inspired by the idea that Bucky is 105. But I guess truthfully, The Odd Couple comes to the fore. I thought Sanford's Son for a second, if you remember that sort of grumpy old guy. But really, The Odd Couple, don't you think?
Yeah, I know a co-host who would very much agree with you, who's not here with us today. Jamie Giracco would certainly agree with you. I love that.
Of course, the Odd Couple hasn't been played for probably, I don't know, 25 years or something, but it was in so many reruns. People will have to go and dig it up and then they'll see what I mean.
I see. Yeah, I just typed it in because I'm not even super familiar with the Odd Couple. But yeah,
some research.
I heard couple, and Jamie is one of our co-hosts who very much ships Bucky and Sam together, and so I thought that would make her happy. But listen, Kari, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I could talk to you for the next 6 hours, so I'm going to let you go now before we do that. We genuinely appreciate you coming on Phase Zero, and huge congratulations on I loved the show, so I hope Marvel calls you back, and I'm following your journey wherever you go next. Too.
I've got my phone sitting right here, ready to ring.
Well, yeah. I hope I will talk to you soon. You're free to close out, and it'll just take you right out of here. We're going to keep the show going and run through the news here. All right. Huge thanks to our guest, Kari Skogan, for an awesome show. We're going to take a one-minute break, and then we're going to come back with some MCU news. Maybe we'll talk about that interview a little bit more. We'll dissect some of it with you here in the comment section. But we'll see you in 60 seconds, everybody, right back on Phase Zero.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I love our intro music. Welcome back to Phase Zero, everybody. It's BD. I'm joined with Aaron and Jen, and we just had Kari Skogan on the show. I just want to say, first of all, I'm so happy we got to have fans live, because that's been a goal of mine, and I want to keep expanding on that and doing more stuff like that going forward. Huge thanks to Kari for being with us, but also to George and Layla and Dottie for being awesome guests on the show as well. Like, you know, if anybody is anything less than respectful and awesome and kind on the show, that's going to ruin it for everybody. And we had some awesome guests who we trusted to come on here, and they knocked it out of the park. So that was super cool.
I know. That was so much fun. That was great.
Yeah. Aaron, did you have any big takeaways from that interview that you thought were fun to discuss and think about further? I want to know who bought Avengers Tower. She's lying. She told me. but I was hoping that New York question would drum up some, but I'm sure that's how it goes, that you're focused on your story, so that was cool. But sorry, go ahead.
One day, someone's going to slip up, BD, and they're going to let you know who bought Avengers Tower, and the internet will be able to rest. Go ahead.
If Malcolm Spellman hasn't said it yet, I don't know. I don't know who will. Malcolm Spellman has said, I'm sure Kevin Feige's like, man, I need you to calm down. That was a great interview. He's a super insightful interview, but he's been making headlines that I'm like, wow, he said that?
Right. I'm just like, oh, the thing about there being more projects that we don't know about, I'm like, somewhere there's just like Kevin Feige, like, we need to hire more snipers.
So, like, does that put him above Russell Crowe and Alfred Molina, or like just below
it's
them?
Like, okay, we need to put blinders on every single person who comes to work for us. They cannot look at the full, like, murder board of everything we have planned, because otherwise they're going to say stuff like this.
No, murder board at Marvel Studios means something different.
That's true. Yeah.
That's where you see a gif of Mark Ruffalo saying, half of them die. Like, But yeah, Kari was a super fun interview. I wanted to ask her, this is my inner film nerd, that like that one shot where Zemo steps on the vials.
I know.
Like they had to create a glass floor for that.
Oh, they definitely did. Yeah.
And I would love to hear about that, but you know, we got to talk about the marvel of it all. So I didn't get to that. But yes, Iron, I have derailed this conversation five times since asking you if there was anything that you thought was really cool. What did you take away?
I really enjoyed sort of like the thought of like her talking about Carl Lumbly and using him as like, you know, sort of a center to ask the questions that, you know, would naturally sort of occur for Sam while he's choosing to take up the mantle. There's no better sort of person to deliver that sort of message to Sam. And it really was nice to hear that they really considered like, you know, Isaiah's story and how that sort of would have to be here. It would absolutely, you can't have, you know, Sam as a black man take up this mantle without talking to the guy who was his forebearer in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if Isaiah is the character that Malcolm Spellman was talking about when he said there was a character we almost didn't get, but we got him and they were really important to the show. I wonder if Isaiah was that character. Maybe. Jenna, what was your big takeaway from the interview?
I like, there was so much of it that was fascinating. Like, I agree with you. I would have picked her brain for hours just from like a film school perspective. Like, yes. I wanted to just know so many things, but like, I think everything she said was just so fascinating. Like hearing about the costume and the process of developing that. And then like hearing that Val was not a post-COVID like addition to the show, because I know there's been so many different reports in the past couple of weeks that have said so many different things. So it was kind of cool to get a definitive answer on that. But yeah, I could have listened to her talk for hours. Like everything was just amazing.
Yeah, that was the Val part was very interesting. And I am curious if that is accurate that she's in Black Widow. But
yeah,
finally we'll know on July 9th because the movie's actually coming out. It's finally actually arriving in theaters and on Disney Plus. But yeah, I mean, if y'all want to talk more about that, if you have questions, I'm reading the Twitch comment section. I have it up here on one window. But I'm going to get to some of the MCU news. It was a pretty chill week for the MCU. Nothing super crazy happened. It's been a busy week for me, though, so if I miss something, somebody please correct me. But first of all, I want to talk about the Sideshow Hot Toys figure of Captain America. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
It is beautiful. It is unbelievable. It looks like they actually shrunk Anthony Mackie in this costume, and you can now own a 1/6 size real life Anthony Mackie and put it on your shelf. I just want, if you haven't seen it, everybody, we have it on the site. You can just Google it, Sideshow Hot Toys, Sam Wilson, Captain America. The thing is gorgeous. I think it's, I don't know how much, I haven't looked at the price. I'm guessing it's got to be north of $300.
Yeah.
But
every time I see a Hot Toys, I'm just like, this is beautiful, but way out of my price range. It's like, listen, I will just buy like 30 Funko Pops for that price. And just like, cause otherwise I'm just going to feel some sort of remorse if I spend that much money at once.
That sound you hear, that sound you hear is everybody's wallets crying. Just everybody's wallets crying in unison right now. Cause it's gorgeous, but my goodness.
See, I made the jump from Funkos to Hot Toys because I got to a point where like I only have so many shelves and I filled them with Funkos. And I was like, okay, what I can do is continue buying Funko Pops, or like once a year I can buy like a Hot Toys figure. And it's become like once and a half a year. But I love those things. But I love Funkos too. It's tough. It's I just need to go win the lottery, man.
Exactly, yeah.
Why haven't I won the lottery yet? Xochitl, I hope I said her name right. Xochitl Gomez, I think that's how you say her name, posted a photo on Instagram of America Chavez from comics. So that's coming in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Anybody super excited in particular for Chavez?
I watched the Babysitter's Club reboot that she was on, and she was so great. Like every actress on that show was just incredible. I'm like, you guys all need to be in things. But so as soon as she was cast as America, it was like, I can visualize this so perfectly. Like she is perfectly cast. And so I'm just really curious how they're going to approach America in the MCU, because especially since they cast her much younger than she usually is portrayed in the comics, it feels like we're really going to get to grow with her over the course of her MCU tenure. Like it's not like we're casting her as like a young adult or like a college age kid and that's just kind of it. It's like we're really going to see her come into her own as a hero, and I think that's going to be really interesting.
Yes, fully agree. I love how Marvel's casting has set up characters and cast members that are going to be with us for a long time, it seems, and we're going to get to spend time with them and grow with them, and that's going to be awesome. We have a comment. Xochitl Gomez is the correct pronunciation, says Julia Delbell. Thank you, Julia. Manatees wants us to talk about Cap 4. So I don't know how much there's to talk about. I'm actually working on a video this afternoon that I'm going to post next week on comicbook.com. 10 things we know about Captain America 4. I don't know what all 10 are yet. I got to do some research. But Malcolm Spellman downplayed it in an interview. I'm sure several interviews. When I talked to him on Monday, he said, did Kevin Feige say that? Did you hear that from Kevin? No, then don't put too much faith in it. Yeah. Okay, Tatiana Maslany. Okay, Sasha Banks. Okay, Kit Harington. We believe you. I mean, Captain America 4 is happening. I saw an interesting conversation on social media. Some people think the Russo brothers should direct Captain America 4.
Hmm.
I'm a big fan of the Russo brothers. That being said, I don't know that I need the Russo brothers to direct Anthony Mackie's Captain America movie.
I agree, honestly. I feel like I have seen, especially after Winter Soldier, which I will still say is my favorite MCU movie ever. It's like I have seen their take on Cap, and I feel like this is a perfect opportunity to bring in another director and potentially like a director of color to come in and kind of put their own stamp on what the franchise would be and like on the idea of having a Black Captain America. So as much as I could see them directing it, I feel like they don't need to. I think you should give that position to somebody else and let them do their own thing.
They did a great job, and I'm not opposed to them doing more Marvel work in the future, but I think Cap 4 could use a fresh voice behind that camera. Aaron, what do you think?
It's the story about taking on, you know, we just covered him taking on a new identity, right? We got to have somebody else in there to help define what Sam is, you know? Like, in some ways, you know, as much as we all love the Russo brothers, it would be, you know, sort of looked at as, is this going to be as good as Winter Soldier? Is this going to be as good as the other movies they've produced for it? So I would like to see someone else, specifically a director of color, tackle it as well.
Oh, the comment section is going crazy for Regina King right now.
Yo, that, give me that.
Yes.
That's fine.
Regina King for Cap 4.
Yeah.
My dream Cap 4 director would never do it, and he's Boots Riley, who did Sorry to Bother You, which is one of the best and weirdest films I've ever seen in my life, and it's one of those things where I would love to see him take on a comic book movie, but I know he would never do it in a million years, and it kills me, because I'm like, I just would love to see him take on Sam's Cap or any other character and kind of put his own stamp on it. But yeah, Regina King, yes, I would be here for that.
I'm here for Regina King. There's also people in the comments who are saying that Kari did such a great job on Falcon and Winter Soldier. I'd like to see her direct it again. I don't, you know, it all comes down to style choices, story. I trust Marvel to pick the right people to direct this or right person to direct this, which might be, it's definitely someone new in my opinion. It's definitely bring someone new in for this franchise. Next up, let's talk about Ironheart. They got a writer in Chinaka Hodge, who is best known for Snowpiercer. I haven't watched Snowpiercer, so I can't really speak to this too strongly. Have either of you watched Snowpiercer?
I have watched all two seasons. I actually can't remember like any which of the episodes she's written, but like when I was writing up the news of her joining Ironheart, it was like she's in a hip hop group with Daveed Diggs and is like best friends with him. And I'm like, all right, that's all I need to know. Like, she seems perfectly suited because she's a poet and an educator and has TV experiences. Like, if there's anybody who's going to take on what Riri's story is in the comics, I feel like she is kind of a perfect person to do that. So I am super jazzed that she's on board and that there's forward momentum on that show.
Yeah, it's nice to see some development on these future projects and the unannounced projects. congratulations to Chloe Zhao, who won an Oscar for Nomadland. That's amazing. And also there was I don't know who said it. Somebody, I think it might've been Chloe, might've been Kevin. Somebody said that Chloe wanted to go super practical for Eternals. And apparently Kevin Feige was like, what's that? I think Kevin Feige was trending on Twitter for reacting to the idea of practical stuff in the Eternals. It's hard to imagine the Eternals being practical, to be fair. Because they're like an immortal race that does a lot of cosmic stuff. They got celestials. Like, how are you going to do that practically?
I just find it fascinating, the idea of like, oh my gosh, a Marvel movie didn't shoot on a green screen. This is like breaking news. This is so amazing. Oh my gosh. So I am very curious to see. I think there is a way to shoot on a practical location and still have Celestials and big space fights and more of those practical elements. So I'm just really excited for that. But it was kind of funny seeing Kevin Feige and his whole thing of like, hey guys, hey other studio execs, this is practical. Did you see this was practical? It was like, come on, man. Like I respect it, but it was just very charming at the same time.
I do need to backtrack here. Dottie and others in the comments are correcting me. Chloe won two Oscars.
Yes.
I said an Oscar. So I will put the proper respect on Chloe's name. And huge news, the biggest news of the week, perhaps. This one really rocked the MCU world on Twitter. Stan Twitter was going crazy. Everybody lost their mind. I think Twitter actually shut down for a moment because there was too many tweets about this. J.B. Smoove is back for Spider-Man No Way Home. Can't believe it. Now, that's cool. You know, everyone else is there. So, like, I'm just looking at the cast list for the cast. The credits for Spider-Man No Way Home are going to be longer than an episode of Phase Zero.
This is the new, like, when the Dune movie was casting and everyone was like, this random person's in Dune, this random person's in Dune. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home is the new version of that, of just, like, everybody is in this movie. You are in this movie and you don't even realize it, kind of thing.
It's just pure insanity what's going on there. I can't wait for that movie. Benedict Cumberbatch is in the movie. I mean, Tom Holland, obviously. Is Tom Holland even in the movie? Does he have time to be in the movie?
He's a supporting character.
Let me know if I miss anybody, because this movie now includes Tom Holland, Zendaya, Jacob Batalon, J.K. Simmons, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, apparently, maybe not. I don't know. Everyone's lying to us. J.B. Smoove, I'm failing. Like, there's so many more people in this movie, obviously.
Alfred Molina. Spoiler.
Jamie Foxx. Barack Obama is in the movie, says the comment section. If Barack Obama shows up in Spider-Man No Way Home, I will have a Captain America picking up Thor's hammer moment. I will go ham in the theater in excitement. Oh, Charlie Cox. Yeah, this is Jim Viscardi's in the movie. Dottie Layla. Huge hernia for his. Kirsten Dunst was rumored, says Brandon Moore. The Kirsten Dunst bit is the one that I would believe to be not true. And there's a couple of reasons. I'm just trying to say maybe somebody's not in the movie. Tom Holland was very quick to say, like, when it gets to Toby and Andrew, he's like, oh, they're not in the movie. I've never met them. I don't know. But when it came to Kirsten Dunst, he was like, no, I've never met her. Like, I've met Toby and I've been in the same place as Andrew, but I've never met Kirsten. So I don't know if she's in Spider-Man No Way Home. Maybe Wanda. Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? But yeah. If anybody has any questions, drop them in the comment section right now. We're going to wrap up the show. I don't want to drag us on here if we don't have anything left to talk about. I feel like we have we've covered a lot of ground today.
Definitely,
this has been
a
great show. Kari was a fantastic guest on today's show.
Yeah.
Aaron, is there anything you want to talk about while I stall for the comments to throw some questions at us?
I just was going to joke around about what is the freaking theatrical poster for No Way Home going to be? If it's not like an homage to like Spider-Man 100 with all the faces, we riot. Like, because there's so many freaking people in it. You just keep putting people in the background, you know? Like,
honestly, that might be what to do. Those first two posters for Homecoming and for Far From Home had such just, like, graphic design is my passion energy. Like, I liked them the more that I looked at them. But from the get-go, it was like, these just look like a high school kid almost made them. And I know that was kind of part of the appeal. So part of me is almost like, just do a weird, like, scrapbook kind of version of just everybody who's in the movie. Do, like, a high school yearbook kind of thing. Like, really lean into the high school aspect of it if you're really going to go for it.
Right, exactly.
I have an exclusive first look at the Spider-Man No Way Home poster.
Oh, boy.
Literally every Marvel character ever. My goodness. I can't wait to get that first look. Grace Randolph was saying the trailer's coming in June or July, which, like, I mean, I don't know if that you could even call that a scoop. Like, yeah, no. 6 months before the movie's coming out, we're supposed to get a trailer. Makes sense. Probably true. Don't know. No inside information myself. Probably true. Doctor Strange 2 is done filming, says Brady Guy 19. Yes, I shouldn't have answered your question because you're a Tom Brady fan. maybe Loki shows up in Spider-Man, Joanna. I don't think so. Milking cows, says Moo, question mark. Moo indeed. And Venom 2 trailer is supposedly soon, says our comment sections casually cosplaying. You heard it from casually cosplaying first. Venom 2 trailer supposedly soon. When does that movie come out? I forget.
I think it was October, but they might have delayed it again. I honestly don't know.
Venom 2. Did it move to 2022?
No, that was Morbius.
September 24th, 2021. Okay. So that one is not going to Disney Plus, apparently. Maybe it is. No. Who knows? What about Morbius? I don't. The only reason I'm excited for Morbius is because Michael Keaton is in it so far. So far. Yeah. I could get excited. I could be convinced the movie's good if it's good. But right now, it's not towards the top of my list. And last thing here, Roe Finer Dairy, Moon Knight News, question mark. Jim Viscardi's not on the show. I just wanted to torment him with this one. I just wanted him to know we're talking about Moon Knight without him. The Moon Knight cast is one that's really looking incredible. Oscar Isaac, Ethan Hawke, right?
Yeah.
And that thing is shit. It starts production this year.
Mm-hmm.
And hold on, I'm looking at this right now. May Calamai. It's tough when you come with these names unprepared, and I feel like such a fool when I can't pronounce somebody's name. Anyway, all right, now I'm just rambling, and we're going to wrap up today's show. Aaron, final thoughts for today's Phase Zero episode. Grace us with some of your tremendous intelligence, please.
I was just so thrilled to have Kari on. It was really nice to hear like all the sorts of like inside baseball stuff behind everything. I think the funny thing is that even though people try not to tip with, you know, the stuff that Feige doesn't want out, the fact that she talks so much about legacy seems like that might be our key theme here in Phase 4, because Black Widow's about legacy. Obviously, Falcon Winter Soldier's about legacy. Who knows? It might come up in Loki somehow, I'm pretty sure. Hawkeye is definitely about legacy. Miss Marvel is. So we're starting to get some threads. Even though we don't have like a big bad yet, it would seem that that's probably our core like theme for this phase, for real.
These young Avengers, man. They're forming. There's so many to pick from. There's so mm-hmm. many young Avengers to pick from right now. WandaVision introduced a couple, you know. I'm going to be showing up as Nova soon, so that's you. Jenna, anything that you wanted to add to close out today's show?
This was just so much fun. This was amazing. Like I said, I could just listen to Kari talk about just the inside baseball of it all just for hours. Like this was so much fun.
Yeah, she was a great guest. Thank you, Jenna. Thank you, Aaron, for being fantastic co-hosts for today's interview. You guys were great and couldn't have done it without you. So thank you for making Kari feel welcome and having a fun time with her.
Awesome.
All right, everybody. We will be back next week with another episode of Phase Zero. If you know a huge Fast and Furious fan, I need you to do me a favor. Send them my way at Brandon Davis BD on Twitter. I need to get in touch with some really big Fast and Furious fans for something I am planning. We're going to get like an exclusive look at the movie for a few fans and record some reactions and do some cool stuff with that. So I need some really big, anywhere in the world, Fast and Furious fans who need a little pick-me-up, who are worthy of a surprise and love the franchise and want to celebrate it with me. So hit me up at Brandon Davids BD. You can find Jenna at Hey, It's Jenna Lynn. You can find Aaron at Summit Lake Hornet. If you want to talk more, use hashtag Phase Zero. We will be skimming through the hashtag on Twitter. Screenshot our show, post it on Instagram. You get a free like from me. Tag me on Twitter. You get a free retweet. The first one. The second one you got to pay for. thank you guys for another great episode of Phase Zero. We will see you next Friday for more. Head over to comicbook.com/Marvel for more updates. I'm BD. I'll see you there.